welcome again to the Life School Masterclass Immersion live event. And our event today, I'm really excited about it. Someone sent in a question about the Serenity Prayer, and it's actually, we wanted to go even more in depth than we did. We answered the question, but we wanted to go more in depth today. We're so excited about talking about it. It's a prayer that has been important to me for a long time. And we're going to talk about it in terms of authentic power and the Serenity Prayer.
So if you haven't heard the Serenity Prayer, it's a beauty. And like Linda, it's been important in my life for a long time. In fact, when my mother gave me a pendant with the Serenity Prayer on it when I was in high school, and it's been in my life ever since. Not the pendant, but the prayer. The prayer is, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. It's that simple, isn't it? Or is it? Why is it that for so many people for so long, the Serenity Prayer why is it that for so many people the Serenity Prayer is so soothing, is so comforting, is so necessary when they're in pain? For me, the Serenity Prayer is one of the most beautiful five sensory prayers in existence, even though it starts out by saying, God grant me. But it's written from a five-sensory perspective. But it reaches so deeply into the very heart of creating authentic power that even five-sensory individuals who have never heard of authentic power feel its soothing, healing, comforting quality. Now that we are multi-sensory, we can begin to understand that. We can explain it, but more than that, we can use the dynamics that the Serenity Prayer is pointing toward. So that's why this session is about authentic power and the Serenity Prayer. So let's start at the beginning of it. Divine intelligence, God, my creator, Watankanka, however you say the creator in your language, grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change. So what are the things that you can't change? You can't change what the world has given to you in any given moment. For example, your child dies. Your house is foreclosed. Your life partner leaves and wants to be with someone else. These are unchangeable givens. They've happened. As an old scripture says, the pen has written and moved on. And there you are with it. Your child, the light of your life, is dead. Now what are you going to do? Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. What does that mean in terms of creating authentic power? Think about it. My child is dead. The person I wanted to live my life with is gone. Grant me the serenity to accept this. In other words, I see this as saying, God, grant me the courage to change myself, because I can't change what's happened outside of me.
Yes.
I don't like it. I feel devastated by it. I feel demolished by it. I'm not sure I want to live. So when anyone in any circumstance like that or any other says, grant me the serenity to accept this. What this person is saying is, help me change myself. Mm. The serenity prayer points you inward to yourself. It says, don't waste your time trying to change the fact that your child has died. Look at what you can change, and it's not outside. It's in you. You are asking for serenity while you are in turmoil. You are asking for serenity while you are in a depression. You're asking for serenity when you're enraged at the universe. You're asking for help to do the most difficult of all things, to change yourself, to change yourself and your internal experiences from fear to love. Well, those of you who have read The Seat of the Soul, and those of you especially who are practicing what's in it, practicing the creation of authentic power, know that that's a good time to pray. That's a good time to pray because you're encapsulated in a frightened part of your personality, and it doesn't seem like a frightened part of your personality. It seems like everything that is and could be. And you are controlled. Your thoughts are controlled. Your perception is controlled by fear. But it's not the fear that you are. It's the fear of a frightened part of your personality. What does that mean? It means of one part of your personality, because there are other parts of your personality that would address this circumstance very differently. For example, instead of grieving the loss of a neonate or a young personality and all that you had wanted from it, another part of your personality, a loving part, would be celebrating that you had the time that you had with this soul that incarnated voluntarily in the form of a small child and chose to return the soul to non-physical reality in its own wisdom and in its own time.
Yes, beloved, I was thinking that I right after I read The Seat of the Soul, I worked with the family as a nurse. And I had this opportunity to be with this child from when she came home from the hospital. Things weren't going well with her all during her time in the hospital, from when she was born until she left. And when she left the hospital, she was 3.5 months old. And it was really an amazing opportunity for me not to caretake her parents, who were really having a hard time, but to really learn from this about myself and to learn about her and to realize I knew she was a soul who had come here, and she kept teaching me about herself, even though she wasn't able to share with me in the way that most children could, even when they're small. She couldn't, she had no ability to smile or eat or do anything. She was just there. But she was a soul, nonetheless. And when she was 19 months old, she went home again. And I knew she had come to share, you know, to whatever she needed to do in this lifetime, which was very short for her. And she had a lot to share with all of us, that the nurses who took care of her, her parents, and everyone around her. And it was really quite an amazing thing. Instead of grieving for her, I was excited, you know, for her journey and what she was doing. And then when she went home, it was so beautiful to see that. So I really got to see that whole thing played out in front of me with this child that was, her name was Sarah Rose, which was so beautiful for me.
What were her parents experiencing?
Her parents were...
Were they joyful at her living for 19 months?
No, they were not. They got more and more distant from her. They got more and more frightened. They got more and more scared. And they pushed her away. They didn't even come into the room after a few months. They wouldn't even see her because she wasn't developing normally like a child would normally develop.
So this... At the birth of this child that had no, that seemed to be lifeless but in a living body.
Yes.
Cause them to experience a complete lack of serenity.
Yes.
Or appreciation or gratitude or joy.
Yes.
So the serenity prayer tells us or suggests that we ask the Creator, Divine Intelligence, God, Krishna, Lord Buddha, help me.
Yeah.
If there's anyone out there who can help me, if this prayer is landing on anyone's desk anywhere, help me. But help me what? Help me to change what's happening inside of me. I'm not asking to change the world. I'm asking for serenity, and I don't have any right now.
Mm.
Now, can you relate that to authentic power? If you know anything about authentic power, how can you not? Because authentic power requires us, now that we're multisensory, to turn inward, to look at the interior dynamics within us that create the painful experiences of judgment, fear, revulsion, pain, and challenge those interior dynamics, because they don't have to do with the external world. They have to do with us. They have to do with you. They have to do with what is happening inside of you. And until you can change that, you're going to be caught and in pain and in darkness. So while we're on the first part of the serenity prayer, let's look at what happens. What does serenity mean? Go as deeply as you can into it. And I will suggest this. Well, before I suggest this, let me give you about 4 or 5 seconds and ask yourself, what do you think underlies serenity? What do you think is the thing that cannot be absent in order for you to experience serenity? Time's up. Anybody come up with anything? Trust.
Yes.
Trust in the universe. If you don't trust the universe, you will never know serenity, except in a moment of grace, when the universe may show you what your life would be like without fear, without captivity in a frightened part of your personality. But then grace always leaves you with compassion so that you will know what it is that you need to create and what you can create. Without trust in the universe, there is no ability to experience serenity. Well, the second part of the serenity prayer is, grant me the courage to change the things I can. Well, to a 5th century human, that may mean, grant me the courage to go out there and make an unjust world just. Grant me the courage to confront evil out there in the world and change it. Grant me the courage to convince unbelievers or infidels that Allah is the way, that Jesus Christ is the Lord Savior for everyone, even if they don't agree. That if you're not practicing Vipassana meditation, you're always going to be in suffering. Someone might say, that's the kind of courage that I'm asking for. I want to get a soapbox, and I want to get an amplified speaker and a microphone, and I want to stand on it, and I'm going to put it in the right at the busiest intersection of the busiest city that I live near, and I'm going to tell everybody about the glory of, and then I'm going to fill in the blanks so that they'll understand where glory really comes from, so that they can listen to me. And that's going to take courage, because people are going to ridicule me and because people are going to not be in agreement. Is that the kind of courage that the serenity prayer is suggesting? For a 5th century human, yes, that's it. But for a multi-sensory human, it's calling for a new use of courage.
Mm.
It's calling for courage to do what is very difficult to do. Look inside yourself and explore your feelings. Look inside yourself. Put your attention in, for example, your throat or your chest or your solar plexus area, and see what physical sensations you're experiencing there. Not simply to say, oh my goodness, I'm sad. Oh, I hurt. Oh, I'm lonely. Oh, I'm depressed. But to look at it. Don't label it. Say, I've got a sharp physical stabbing pain in the right side of my chest area. I've got a constriction the size of a golf ball in the middle of my throat and it hurts. Mm. I've got a burning, churning sensation in my solar plexus area. I feel like there's a band across my chest of steel and somebody is tightening the band. That takes courage. What do most people do when they experience those kind of things? Oh, there's quite a menu they can choose from. They can become angry. They can become depressed. They can become vengeful. They can become obsessive and keep thinking about something like someone that they think is going to change their lives, someone they've fallen in love with, or someone that they have to get even with. They can eat, drink, smoke, masturbate, watch pornography, look for sex, shop, gamble, use drugs. Have you ever seen anyone do any of those things? Have you ever seen anyone who doesn't or hasn't? Mm-hmm. In other words, have you ever seen anyone that hasn't been in the depths of the pain that lies beneath a frightened part of the personality? The pain of powerlessness. That's what you need to look at and experience before you can change yourself. Because until you become aware of in yourself of what needs to be changed, you can't change it.
So the courage to change yourself, what you're saying is to feel the pain, but with the purpose of changing yourself, not with the purpose of doing something about the things you can change. And the things you can change are the frightened parts of your personality.
That's right.
And so if I can feel the pain of it and just wallow in it. That's not what you mean.
No, that's not what I mean. Because there's courage required yet again. There is the courage required to act in that very moment from the most loving part of your personality that you can reach for or even imagine. A part of your personality, for example, that once felt love for someone. Not need, by the way, that's important. Not need, but love, a giving, a want to contribute without second agendas. Or that was touched by the love of someone else. And it might not be a sentimental kind of love. It might have been someone who always held your best interest in heart. Or even did for a moment, and you felt that moment. Reach for that. Reach for that experience while you're depressed, while you're angry, while you're judging, while you're enraged. That takes courage. But that's required if you're going to change yourself. That's a responsible choice. In other words, instead of acting again, yet again, from the pain of a frightened part of your personality that you have inside of you, that before you may never have even thought about, you've simply reacted to, in addition to feeling it without reacting, going inside and observing the physical sensations in your body, and then choosing not to act on those, not to create the consequences, the terrible, painful, destructive consequences that you've created in the past, but instead to reach for a loving part of your personality, one that's grateful or content or caring or patient, and act on that right then, when you want to kill yourself, or you want to kill someone else, or you want to do something just to hurt someone else, because this is what a frightened part of your personality does, even if it's someone that you love. That takes courage.
It takes a lot of courage.
Yes, it does.
So I'm not talking about the courage to change the things you can, meaning that you change all the outside circumstances that you can instead of changing yourself. We're not talking about that. We're talking about how you change yourself so that you don't have separation from other people, that you don't block others from your love. Because if you're not sending love out in the world, if you're not able to let the energy of the universe come into you and go out in love, then you have work to do. You have work to do in yourself. So in other words, the energy that comes into you always comes in pure. And if you have frightened parts of your personality active and you're acting on them, you're sending, not only are you sending fear and doubt into your own being, but you're sending it out to everyone else too.
And how are you doing that? You're shouting at them. You're judging them. You're pushing them away. You're closing your heart to them. That's what it feels like to act in fear. And that is what...
Blaming them.
Blaming. Yes, there's lots of ways to do it, and all of them hurt. You. Maybe the other person experiences some pain too, but that's the other person's issue to deal with. And by the way, when Linda says you have work to do, she's not talking like a supervisor who's saying, hey, when are you going to start doing your work, you know? What do you think you're here for? We're paying you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that at all. It's not like that at all. There's no rush. There's no hurry. You can remain in anger, jealousy, the need to control, the need to dominate, the need to please, for as long as you like. Do it all day. Do it all week. Well, you can experiment with doing it for the next 3 years. Do you know that some people do it all their lives? And as multisensory humans, you can begin to appreciate that some people may have done it through hundreds of lifetimes.
Mm. Yeah.
But eventually the time will come when you'll make the connection between your choices and your experiences. This was obvious at a certain level for five sensory humans. If you put your hand in a light socket, you you experience what AC current feels like. And you could even kill yourself that way. But as you're multisensory, and you are, or you wouldn't be on this, you wouldn't be at this event, then you know that when you act from fear, you create painful consequences for yourself. You push people away. You feel pain in your energy processing centers. And sooner or later, you come to the conclusion that it's not the world, it's not other people who are responsible for the pain you're feeling, but you can change the pain because it's in you, and that requires courage to do. It requires courage to experience these parts that need to be changed in you if you're going to move into your full potential. Not if you're going to be accepted into heaven or thrown into hell. If you're in a frightened part of your personality, you are in a hellish experience. And when you're in a loving part of your personality, you are in a blissful, heavenly experience. And you can choose, but you have to be aware first. And you have to use your courage to be aware. And you have to use your courage then to act differently than a frightened part of your personality demands that you act. You may be with someone that you've loved for years, and that someone does something that you don't like. Now, let's be clear now, that a frightened part of your personality does not like. And you throw that person out of your life just to satisfy the needs of a frightened part of your personality that has never done more for you than create painful, 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 again and again, painful consequences, each of which is an opportunity for you to begin to grow spiritually. And this is another one. How many of them will you squander? That's up to you. The universe is not going to stop giving them to you. We're living in a wise and compassionate, alive universe. It's in us. We are in it. How are you going to use your life? We suggest you use it to create authentic power. And this is what the Serenity Prayer is pointing out. The last part of the Serenity Prayer is, grant me wisdom to know the difference.
Mm-hmm. Between the things I can change and the things I can't change.
Right. That part of the prayer if you're listening to the wisdom, has been granted to you. It's always granted. When you pray, answers to questions like that come. But as we become multisensory, and we are beginning to be clear about what we can change and what we can't change. What we can't change is the world. The world is in our lives for a reason, put it that way. The world presents experiences for your personality that are not always experiences that your personality would choose, but they are experiences that are necessary nonetheless to bring awareness of the soul into the consciousness of the personality. That's how the Earth School works. So the last part of the Serenity Prayer is, grant me the wisdom to know the difference. That means, help me to see when I'm pursuing external power, trying to manipulate and control the external world so that I will feel better about myself or safer, and authentic power, which means using the internal, my experiences of internal dynamics that are activated in me as I interact with the external world to grow spiritually, using those to change myself, using those to act with the intentions of the soul, harmony, cooperation, sharing, and reverence for life, using those choice by choice in the most turbulent of storms, which means when the frightened parts of my personality are all around me and I can't see anything else. The movie everyone's heard about is called The Perfect Storm. Every time you're in a frightened part of your personality, you're in one. What makes it perfect? It is the perfect opportunity for you, given the wisdom of the choices that you've made, to look at yourself and change yourself with your own volition and your own will to create authentic power, to create a life of humbleness, clarity, forgiveness, and love, to create a life of meaning and fulfillment, to create a life of contribution instead of exploitation, to create a life that is an ongoing offering of the gifts that you were born to give. These are the gifts that your soul wants you to give.
You know, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the last part. Not the last part, but the part where the courage to change the things about change the things you can, and how misunderstood that is, especially by five sensory, and actually, someone can be multisensory, but in a frightened part. So if you keep complaining about people or job or your partner, and then you use all those complaints and stories that you have about these things to change, and then you say, I'm going to change this. I can do something about this. I'm going to change this job. I'm going to change, get another partner. I'm going to get another friend, whatever you decide. So if you use your courage to change those things, but you don't look at yourself because you're the one who's angry, who's has a wall up, who's blaming and all of that, if you don't change yourself, the universe will offer you that opportunity again and again and again with each job, each person, each spouse, each partner. It will continue to offer you that until you decide to use the courage to change yourself. And that's so important to know that. And
Linda's just described the horizontal path. The horizontal path is, as you go through your life, you change circumstances, partner, city, job. But you don't change. When you create authentic power, you put yourself on the vertical path. You change. And that's the change that counts. So the Serenity Prayer, in all its beauty, is, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. And in its many forms of beauty, multi-sensory humans can say the same thing in different ways. Divine intelligence, help me challenge fear in me and cultivate love in me so that I can give the gifts my soul wants me to give.
Now, that's so beautiful. Gary wrote that the other day, and it just made me cry. It was just so, so beautiful to me. I want to say it again. Divine intelligence, help me to challenge fear in me and cultivate love in me so that I can give the gifts my soul wants me to give. That's my serenity prayer now.
That's the road we're all on. So I'm glad to be on it with you, and I'm delighted that you're on this call.